that's why people love Dubai, because it's about control and it's about releasing those emotions. Because when people are sold, think about it this way for a second. When people are sold, there is a feeling of, did I just get taken? Did the salesperson make commission off me? Was I just a number? All these different negative things come to mind because the buying experience got flipped from the customer being in control to the salesperson being in control. And whether the customer is in control or not, and that's why I say a great sales process is walking side by side with that customer, walking with them toward a buying decision that is more favorable, that's far more favorable for them than it is for you. And so that's why people loved, and it's a great Zig Ziglar quote, and I'm a huge Zig Ziglar fan. One of the highlights of one of my personal highlights was getting to interview Zig's son, Tom, on a morning talk show that I hosted. And I have a book out in my office autographed by Tom Ziglar, because his father had such an impact on me and the way that I thought about selling. So I'm really thankful, Ryan. Thank you for bringing up that comment, that quote from Zig Ziglar, because Zig is 100% correct.
Definitely.
I love the way how Brian brought it up. See, Brian, there is something I would love to pinpoint in here. Your experience is amazing when it comes then to food industry. The food industry, mainly, it depends on psychological behavior, by the way, because mainly it depends, eating is combined with, when it comes down psychologically to the feelings of the human, it depends mainly on two things. It depends on the desire and the need, the need you have to eat, why to survive and to live. The desire goes with the thing that you love more to eat or to have. The power of purchase, or the purchase power in the market, in any market, in all markets, the way how I look at it, when a guy is buying, it's different than a woman is buying. The guy is a spender, the woman is a saver, by the way. In sales, it is, for a guy, it's hard to convince a guy. But a female or a woman can convince a guy. And vice versa. In food, you're absolutely 100% Brian when it comes down, this is what I want, so this is what I will get. You cannot sell me, and you cannot there's a probability that he can oversell you because you might like it. But when it comes down to the purchase power itself, it has got different variables according to different markets. The food industry is different than software industry, is different than, I would say, digital marketing industry, is different than, clothing industry is different. But it mainly depends on people want to buy, so they will go ahead and buy. It's one of the important questions that I got asked once is that, what do you think about the TV ads? TV ads can get people to buy sometimes, to buy some items that they do not need, as a matter of fact.
Definitely.
Why? Because through the TV, TV is a kind of a visual and audio, so you are feeling and you are sensing and you are hearing what is that service for, what is that product for. So what happened? Emotionally, you got moved to take that action, even though you don't want it, or you don't need it. But what happened at the end of the day? You went to buy it. The difference in here is what? The difference is the willing to buy. I want to buy this, so what will happen? I'll go ahead and get dressed. I'll go to that store or to that service provider. I will buy or I will subscribe. But people fail in the part of selling. See, it's not the client's fault. It's in the selling process, I always blame the salesman, not the client, because the client has got the complete right to understand. They have got the complete right to know. They have got the complete right to be educated. And back again to the point, it's the target. Because the main focus for salespeople is hitting the target not to educate, not to spread awareness about the product or that service. So in like they did not, or they were not able to move that client or that prospect or that lead to move the emotional part in that person to push him to take the action. How would you move a person emotionally to take a step forward? Now, it starts with a mind. It starts with a brain. Like, brain is the processor of the info, of any kind of data. If I was not able to explain to that client what is the value, how would it be a benefit, how I can be serving you, at that time, the client will not understand. So he will not be motivated to take the to take it to the next level. He will not be able to buy. He will not be able, he's not convinced to do it. Why? Because that's that fault, it falls back on the salesperson. That's the difference between buying and selling. What Brian said is 100% right. Well, people get afraid to be sold. Through experiences, like whether it could be a past experience, whether it could be a present experience or a recent experience, every customer, even us, like even us when we are sold something, like we come down to think or to think about, oh, why, what is he selling me? Why is he selling me? Why should I buy it? Do I need it? Well, as a matter of fact, like TV ads, as an example, when it comes down to food, they create the need. The need. Like if we look at the slogan as an example, McDonald's, what is the slogan of McDonald's? I love it. Or I'm loving it. The slogan.
Well, Sam, you've got that exactly right, because and let's think about a minute. There's a term that we hear all the time called buyer's remorse.
True.
And it goes hand in hand with what Zig Ziglar said about people loving to buy and hating to be sold. Because when people love to buy, there's no buyer's remorse. They're telling everybody about the purchase that they made. Or if they are totally in love with it. So let's say, for instance, they bought a new car. And they were like, oh, you should see my car. I got a great deal. I got this. They're telling everybody because they love to buy. When they got sold, they're not telling anybody because they've got buyer's remorse. They're like, no, I don't think I got a good deal. Or they're talking about the negative connotation. When someone feels like they got sold, they're going to say, no, I didn't feel like I got a good deal, and I don't think you should go buy from that person, or I don't think you should go buy that product, because the negative emotions start to come in. I don't feel like I got treated well. I don't think they listened to me. I don't think they respected what I wanted. I don't feel like that my needs were brought into consideration in the buying process. So yes, Sam, you're exactly right. And sometimes you mentioned spender saver. So I'm the natural spender in my house.
True. Well, that's a fact. Like that's the purchase power. Like the guy is a spender, the woman is a saver, but woman is a spender as well when it comes down to her stuff. Like if she likes something, she will go ahead and buy it.
My wife wants to make sure every I's dotted and every T's crossed. She's a salesperson's nightmare. Like I hate to say it, but, and she will tell you that. She's like, listen, you're not going to sell me anything until I feel like mentally I'm in the place where I understand it.
True.
My wife will ask so many questions. I'm like, sweetheart, please, 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 please. I can just feel myself aging. And I love my wife. My wife and I have been married 23 and a half years.
God bless.
But I feel myself aging. I'm like, sweetheart, ask one question. But she has to understand. She has to totally understand the process. And she has to totally understand it in her mind. And there are buyers that we deal with, Sam, that are just like that. And so if we're going to be salespeople who are consistent, and we're going to be salespeople who truly care for customers, then every baby step that they take toward that decision, we've got to be walking with them. And we can't be pulling them away from their process. Rather, we have to embrace it. And every question they ask, true, we have got to be prepared with an answer that's going to help them move forward in the selling process and in the buying process.
I 100% agree. Cannot agree anymore.
So something I had written down is, when Brian was talking, he said, buyers understand differently. So how do we ensure that we're providing them with the value they need while still speaking their language?
That's a very good question. Okay. Now it comes down to the point of, like, I had that question, the same question recently by one of my reps, and they were like, listen, like, okay, we provide a service, but my question is, does that service suit every lead? I was like, yes, it does. They were like, how? I was like, you have to think. You have to understand what is your service first. What are you providing in order for you to be able to match it with that business? Like, let's say an example, food. Food, any food company, any business in the food industry. Why people prefer to go to that business or to that restaurant or to that store, not the other store? Did that other store create the need? Did that store promote his product perfectly? Did that store understand the mentality of the lead or the prospect or the client that they'll be selling to? Those are main key factors for success in sales. That's in food. Same concept in sales, in services. Like lead generation, let's take lead generation as an example. Do people fail in promoting their service? Sometimes yes. Why? Because they do not understand the need of the client. They don't, like, I want to sell the leads. Okay, I'm sell the leads, but how good it would do you? How, or what is the benefit that will be brought to you? How it will be more effective to your business? How it would get your business to be reaching potential customers or potential prospects? How? If the lead generation business cannot answer those questions, the business will fail. Because me as a client, I'm a type of a person that, like, on daily basis, I deal with leads. Like, me in outsourcing, like, I do telesales, like, voice services, non-voice, like, both of them outbound. Sometimes it's marketing, sometimes it is sales. So do I depend on leads? Yes. At the end of the day, what is the meaning of a lead? Lead, at the end of the day, is a person. Like, sometimes I hate to call it a lead. Like, sometimes I love to call
it. And I want to jump in there because I think you are talking, you're really on point right now. Because we look at leads, and I remember when I transitioned from food over to selling higher education. So I was an admissions officer for a for-profit college. And so we had leads that were coming in all the time from high school students. Mm-hmm. And some leads were hot, what we considered hot leads. In other words, we had a presenter that went into the classroom and got the student interested. And they told them, look, if you're interested in speaking to an admissions officer, tell me personally and they'll be in contact with you within 24 hours. And we would. And with those, we considered hot leads. So when we're talking leads, we're talking, I am interested in your product, company, or service. And so then we have to understand, okay, level of interest. A lead is, to me, is I'm interested. So if I think about a lead, and I think about, again, let's go back to the way we talked a little bit ago about thinking about how we buy, okay? I might be interested, and eBay and Amazon's a good example. So you can watch different items that you're interested in. True. And by watching them, you can put them and you can say, I'm interested in buying that item. And I've noticed something about eBay is a lot of times that buyer that you're looking to, that you're looking at an item of theirs, they might send you a private offer and say, hey, I noticed you're watching my item. Would you be interested if I sold it to you at this price? All of a sudden, my interest may go from a 2 or 3. My interest may jump up to an 8.5 or a 9.
True.
Because of that comeback. Line. Right. That comeback to me of now all of a sudden, because they threw that out there, my interest may peak. Now, it may go the other way. I may say to myself, no, I'm good. I'm going to sit back and I'm just going to, you know, wait it out. Or my interest might change, Sam, based mm-hmm. on something that has happened from the time I started watching to the time that we're in right now. I might have gotten furloughed. And as we're talking in the midst of this COVID-19 situation, there are millions here in the United States that are in that same boat. A week ago, they might have been buyers. Today, that interest has waned. So what is the level of interest at that moment? And how do you take that buyer, that lead, from an interest level of, say, 3 or 4? And maybe that buyer, when you get that lead, Sam, is at an interest level of an 8 or a 9. And then the close time ratio and factor is not all that big. You just need to dot the I's and cross the T's and get that customer in the fold. But again, I think when we talk about leads and lead generation, really it's all about how interested is that customer in that moment, and how do you keep them, one, keep them interested, and two, take their interest from just an interest to a serious buying conversation.
True. 100% accurate. And this is the thing that...
Go ahead, Sam.
Go ahead, Ryan.
So I just want to share a quick story about... I'm not the easiest person to sell, obviously, being in sales, and I think you two could agree with me. It takes a little bit of effort to get us to make a purchase. But I was sold by someone that I actually listened to a podcast they appeared on, connected with them on LinkedIn, and this is before people were doing a lot of video messages and audio messages. She left me an audio message, and that really stuck out to me. We kept a dialogue going, and eventually she explained how she could help, and you know, I was sold. Now, it's kind of an unorthodox way to be sold, but I think what's really important here is she differentiated herself. She utilized tools that other people weren't using and just stood out to me, and that's why I made the purchase.
Well, it's so simple, Ryan. She basically told you, Ryan, this is how I can help you. If you're interested, let me know. And all of a sudden, she took you from a 3 or a 4 in interest to a 9 and a 10, and you ended up doing business because she made it really simple. Ryan, this is how I can help you. Any questions? And immediately gave you a solution. Like, how simple is that concept? We think that, I mean, to me, I'm blown away hearing that story because what I take from it was the person you engaged with cut immediately to the chase. This Simplicity. Is how I can help you. Yeah, Sam, it's 100% right. This is how I can help you. And guys, why is it so hard at times for, are we so married to a sales process that we can't just step back and say, here's how I can help you? I feel like at times that we're more interested in the process than in the position of the buyer that we're sitting across from.
That has got, or that goes to Brian for many reasons. Why is it hard? The answer is, see, sometimes, and I'm like right now, I'm talking about telesales. Sometimes the people on the phone, they have to be scripted. They have to follow the script. The script like if you are not 100% knowing what you're doing, if you don't have the enough experience how to sound, because probably you cannot like learn by heart because you always keep forgetting because whatever so reason is, if you do sound scripted, now that's what I call robotic, that's the first failure. The second thing, the script has got a lot of complications. Like it has got a lot of wording. It has got a lot of like when someone like this is what I practice with my reps. Like I'm like, guys, listen, do not go with a script. You do understand the service. You do understand what we can do. You do understand the whole scenario, right? Some of them struggle. Some of them, well, I can do fine with a script. I'm like, okay, whatever makes you happy, go ahead and do it. But what matters for me is that you are successful with what you're doing. Don't struggle. Like, why should you struggle? The struggle comes out because of the process. The actual process, it has got a couple of knots and complications in some aspects or in some places within the process. When that happens, automatically it will be reflected on the client side. This is why people struggle. Like, this is a question that I always ask. Why do salespeople have to follow a script? You know the service. You know what is your product. You do understand it. You did the math. You did your homework. Are you able to explain? I mean, when we say role play in the sales industry, what does it mean role play? What am I role playing over? Am I role playing over a script? This is not called role playing. This is called learning by heart. This is called memorizing. Am I discussing how do you sound when you are reading it? Well, you are reading, because when you are reading something, you cannot read. Like when we speak faster than we read when we are reading. So you cannot read three lines in one statement. If you did, like Ryan, I told you this one couple of days ago. It is all about keeping your brain and keeping your tongue on the same speed. If someone is able to go ahead and do that, then okay, fine. This is called success. But with a script, people sound like, you know what? Like, I don't know. Like, I have to get to my boss. Okay, let me just get my boss. I'll go in and ask them, and then I'll get back again to you. That gets the lead on the phone or the client or the person on the phone to be hesitant. Like, does he know what he's talking about or not? Now, that agent or that rep definitely 100% lost confidence in themselves. Why? Because they got squashed by question. They don't know what is the answer for that one. And this is most of the cases, by the way. This is what, like, I face it a lot with a lot of salespeople that they are struggling to deliver the accurate answer on the phone. Like, why do you have to put me to somebody else? Like, don't you know what you are doing? Don't you know, or don't you understand what is your product or what service you're providing? The answer in most cases, no. This is where the struggle comes from, the process. Because it has to go, it has to be an opener, then afterwards a sales manager. So what about if we got all the people to be sales managers instead of openers? What will happen at that time?
Well, Sam, you mentioned something about the script and things like that. And I'm reminded, you know, when you see a movie or you see a play, it is people translating what someone else wrote and bringing it to you visually, because now you're taking words that a writer or a script author has taken and you see it played out in front of you. And a lot of times it's very good. I'm reminded of the great, late, great actor, comedian, Robin Williams. The reason that Robin Williams was so incredibly gifted and talented and funny was because most of the time, Robin Williams improvised on camera. He improvised a lot of things that he did. The first television show that Robin Williams did back in 1978, 79 was Happy Days. And I'm old enough to remember Happy Days because I'll be 48 in August. But I was watching an interview with two of the stars of that show, Anson Williams and Donnie Most. Anson played Potsy, and Donnie Most played Ralph Mouth. And it's classic television. Happy Days, one of the most classic, iconic television shows in American history. And Anson Williams and Donnie Most were talking about Robin Williams. And when Robin Williams appeared on their show, everything he did was improvised. And it was a smashing hit. And they were talking about how Robin Williams just came in and stole the show and how brilliant he was at improvisation. That led to Robin Williams getting a television show called Mork and Mindy, where his improvisational skills could be taken to the next level. And that show was popular to the point where Robin Williams started getting the notice of movie people. And so Robin Williams did Popeye and he did several other things. But where Robin Williams was brilliant was Robin Williams knew how to improvise when he needed to improvise.
Yep.
But Robin Williams could also dive into deeper depths of himself. Good Will Hunting is a great example. That's not one of Robin. If you look at Robin Williams's portfolio of movies and you think, man, Robin Williams, one of the greatest comedians of all time, but you look at Good Will Hunting, it's totally against character of everything Robin Williams ever did, but yet he did it so brilliantly. Robin Williams knew how to improvise when it was the right time to improvise. It's like a great musician, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Great musicians know how to improvise.
True.
When it's called upon for them to improvise, but yet great musicians can take a piece of sheet music and play it beautifully note by note. I think what you're talking about in the sales process is knowing the art of improvisation and how to implement it at those times where it's absolutely necessary to bring that customer into the discussion. But yet there are times when we have to play those notes correctly because the customer is connecting with the script. And so I couldn't help but think about that when you were talking about the script. There's a time and a place for both things to work incredibly well.
Yep, absolutely. I agree with you.
Definitely. I'm on the same page with that. One thing I just want to bring up before we end here is I've been really torn. Like, I've posted about ditch the script, but then at Directive we were using the script and it was successful. But the reason why it was successful was I understood how to navigate the script and I wasn't reading straight off the computer monitor. I knew what I wanted to say. I knew when it had to be said. And that's why it felt natural. It felt improvised because I wasn't just pulling it word for word off of the script.
Ryan, I'm just kind of sitting here thinking, I wish we had another 5 hours to continue to talk about this. You know, I'm feeling a twinge of sadness here. Do you know why you were so good at that? Because we take pieces of conversation and we're able to weave them into our daily lives. So 6 months ago, the term social distancing, if someone had told you that term 6 months ago or a year ago, you would have said, what's this? Now social distancing is very much a part of our vernacular in the time that we're in right now. We can take things, Ryan, to your point, we can take things that we pick up. We can become so good at incorporating things into our vernacular that they do sound very natural to us. You know, think about it this way, guys. And again, I'm going to age myself. I remember when we got email 24 years ago, we got email. And now all of a sudden, Google, who was a small search engine back years ago, Google took a company and transformed it into a verb. Now when we talk about searching something, we don't say, well, let me do a search on the internet. We say, going to
Google. Yep, that's true.
Google it.
Google it,
our vernacular. Yeah, we took that and incorporated it into our vernacular. You know, my son uses Snapchat. He's like, well, let me snap that person. they've taken that terminology and seamlessly worked it into their daily vernacular.
True.
And so, Ryan, to your point, we get so good at talking about product. We get so good at talking about part of the way we speak when we're speaking professionally.
We lost you there. Can you repeat what you said, Brian?
I said, what I said was, I'll take a quarter pounder with cheese and a large fry, and please bring that to me and deliver that to me. No, what I said, Ryan, I said that we take things that we know professionally, a part of our internal lexicon from a professional standpoint. And we get so good at regurgitating and repeating those things that it just comes forth naturally when we're speaking to a customer, as though they should know exactly what we're talking about, because we got so good at repeating that, it's just become a natural part of us.
Definitely. And that's the best way to sound, is that natural flow versus like what we're talking about, a scripted conversation. Just going to end things real quick here. Brian, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Like, I really like it and I enjoy it.
Hey guys, let's do this again. If folks want to find me on LinkedIn, they can find me on LinkedIn, Brian Sexton. It's actually Brian Sexton MBA. Not NBA, not like National Basketball Association, but MBA, like Masters of Business Association. I wasn't talented enough to go to the NBA. You can also find me on Twitter at Brian Sexton 13. And Ryan, again, thank you for mentioning the podcast, The Intentional Encourager Podcast. So I'm looking forward to carrying this conversation on to the next thing. And let me say this real quick to everybody that's listening out there. This too shall pass. This is going to be okay. What you consistently did before COVID-19 happened in your selling process and connecting with your customers, keep doing it, because your consistency before COVID-19 and through COVID-19 is going to carry you to greater success after COVID-19, because your customers are going to know, one, what they can expect, and two, what you deliver consistently.
Definitely. I couldn't agree with that more. So we know where to find you, Twitter and LinkedIn, and you got the podcast. Is there anything else you wanted to drop before we hop off here?
I will again take a quarter pounder with cheese, a large fry. You know, if anybody is feeling like that they want to gift some food my way. No, let's just stay positive, Ryan and Sam. Let's just encourage each other. Encouragement now more than ever is what we need. You know, if you know a sales guy that's just been furloughed, reach out to them and say, hey, let me know what I can do. Be available to your connections, be accessible. Ryan and Sam, I have done more Zoom calls just personally reaching out to my connections in my network and just meeting people. It has been awesome. Just, you know, Ryan, you and I have had a few conversations, and again, it's just been refreshing to just meet and connect with people during this time, because doing this now, guys, you wait till this COVID-19 thing is over with. You are going to build relationships through this that are going to be lasting and lifetime. I'm telling you, it's going to be better than anything you can ever imagine, because you're going to find that person that you met through this, and your both of your situations bonded you together. You're going to find that things past this, that relationship is just going to be carried on further. So again, I just want to encourage people, reach out and encourage people and stay positive. Thank you guys so much, Ryan and Sam. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome, Brian.
I'm excited about the Daily Sales Dish podcast. This is great. Thank you guys so much.
By the way, Brian, we were bonded by boredom. We've run out of things to do, so start a podcast.
I hear you. And, you know, again, there's a lot of great ideas are born out of boredom, man. And,
true.
And you know, things like that. So I will say this. I will tell you this, okay, in closing. I believe that in the year 2038, the college market is going to have the greatest enrollment explosion that they're ever going to have, because people are quarantined. And married couples may start having, this may be the new baby boomer. This may be the new baby boom, guys. So again, if you want to buy stock in anything, you probably want to start buying stock in college 529 plans, education companies, because I'm telling you, man, this has been an interesting time, to say the least.
So this has been the Daily Sales Dish. I just want to thank you for listening. Thank Brian again for his time. And this is Ryan and Sam signing off.
Thanks a lot, everyone.
Thank you.